In 2013, I distinctly remember a time and place in my life that I'll probably never forget. And we've all had those experiences where you can just pull it up in your memory and you can remember exactly what you saw or what you felt in a situation. Maybe what you smelled when you were in that place and doing what you were doing. And that was the case for me in 2013. In the fall of 2013, I was on a ministry trip with a team of friends. I believe there was five of us, and we were in Nepal, and I had never been to a place like that, and I was excited. And we arrived into Kathmandu, and we were then going to take a bus trip from Kathmandu to a place called Pokhara. And if I recall, the bus left the station at around 1 to 2 p.m. in the afternoon, and it was supposed to be about a 7-hour bus trip, 7 to 8 hours. It's kind of a treacherous road. And this bus trip ended up taking more like 13 hours. We arrived at about 3 o'clock in the morning into Pokhara. And one of the reasons it took so long is because it probably took us about 4 hours just to get out of the Kathmandu area. Pretty big city, but it was unlike anything I've ever experienced. We made so many stops along the way out of the city. And those stops included picking up people. And I thought the bus was full, and it apparently wasn't. And they kept picking up more and more people. And people's possessions. So one of our last stops is the moment that really sticks in my mind. And a significant portion of it that sticks in my mind. So we come up to our last stop, and we were packed. In fact, we were so packed that about a 14-year-old boy had got on the bus, and there was people standing down the center, and he worked his way back, and for whatever reason, he chose me to just simply sit right down on my lap as I was sitting there on the seat. So I distinctly remember that. He was a poor boy, and he probably hadn't had a bath in a very long time. And I just about could not handle the smell of what was going on there. And I was told before we went that you have to really love these people. Like, it takes effort to really love. And so I was trying to practice that and tried to talk with him. He didn't know any English, which was the case for pretty much everybody there. So we were sitting there, and 5 minutes go by, and it was really hot, and it was about 5 p.m. or so, and I look out the windows at this particular stop and some of the other stops. This was fairly common, and a lot of children and young adults would come up to the windows, and if they were tall enough, they would stick their hand in and try to see if anybody would give them anything. A lot of them were poor, and the young children that weren't tall enough would find somebody about their age, and they would take turns going up on their shoulders and reaching through the windows to try to see if somebody would give them something. Because they were begging for whatever they could get. And the look in their eyes is something I won't forget, and that would just stick with me. And most people didn't give them anything. I was not really next to the windows in the aisle, and this guy was kind of sitting on me, so I couldn't really see them as well or give them anything. But this was a common sight. But I could see out the windows well enough to know that our final stop had a small family that appeared to be moving all of their possessions to Pokhara. And I mean that. They were moving. This was their U-Haul. And so this is a passenger bus that was already quite top-heavy with people's suitcases that go up on this rack and everything. There was a bunch of guys that got out. They throw ropes over top of one side, and there's a bunch of anchor points down here. These guys are holding on like this on the one side. And they would take these huge blankets, and their possessions got wrapped up in these blankets, and they were huge. And they started to pull them up the other side. So windows get blocked for a second, everybody clears out, and all this, their entire life possessions, they were moving to Pokhara. So they loaded them up on top. There's about seven guys standing up on the roof, and the whole bus is kind of swaying around, and that was our ride. This bus was probably 15 feet tall or so by the time all of their possessions were on top. And so it was quite top heavy. So it became apparent that this was going to take some time. And it did. It probably took 30 to 45 minutes to get all their stuff up there and tied down. And some guys even stayed up there to sit on stuff. And then we were off. But because it became apparent that this was going to take some time, we wanted to get some fresh air. So we made our way to the front, me and my team. I surrendered my seat to this guy, so he sat there. And we went outside, and here's all the children, and most of them about 12 years old and younger. I distinctly remember a family that was kind of looking on. I believe they were some relatives maybe of the ones who were moving. And at first, these children are kind of all over you to try to get free stuff. And a notorious thing that happened in Nepal all the time, especially with 10-plus-year-olds, was they would come up and give you these great big hugs, and they would act like they're giving you a hug, but they were actually feeling all over you to try to pick your pockets at the same time. So that happened. And one of the girls on our team, her name was Sarah, she was very good with children. She spent quite a bit of time in Africa and worked with children there. And she started to pull out some things from her bag. She had some toys and that sort of thing. And we started to try to talk to these children and the people around us. Well, no surprise, none of them knew English. But it didn't take long for me to remember something to this day. So I got a question for all of us. Some of you are fluent in more than one language. We've got some Spanish speakers and that sort of thing. So how many languages do you know? If you know more than one language, I want you to raise your hand. Okay, we're getting there. You guys see what I'm saying. All right, so there's quite a few that do know more than one language. So I'm going to propose to you that all of you know at least two languages. Okay, so follow with me on this. And this was shown to me in this moment, and it clicked for me. Those children did not really, really want what we had in possessions. Deep down inside, really all they wanted was love. And that was a language that we could speak to them, even though we didn't know their native language and they didn't know ours. And that was exemplified in just a few minutes. All of a sudden, all the kids were not worried about grabbing what they could to take, probably to take to their parents. Because that's what they were instructed to do most of the time, was to go out and see what you could grab and bring back for the family. But they just wanted love. And we had a blast just playing with these children, and we did not even know their native language. And that will always be remembered to me as an example of a situation that could have slipped away. And it wasn't my idea to get out. It was Sarah's idea. And I'm glad that we did, because we were able to make some great memories with these children. And I didn't have time to go back on my external hard drives and pull up the photos, but I would love to show you a photo of that moment. We actually got some really cool photos of that exact scene. And it happened all throughout the trip, and we used that as a springboard for other things, and it was really good. So, known languages in the world today, approximately 6,500 plus languages in the world are spoken on a daily basis. 6,500 or more. They know there's more than that, but that's the research that I found shows that's the current number. Many languages are dying out, smaller languages, and the English language is the most popular in the world. A little over, some estimates were different than others, but a little bit over 2 billion people in the world would be able to be fluent or communicate in English. Very few people, however, are fluent in the language of love. It's not something that is very prevalent in the world today. So approximately, these numbers are very difficult to track, but what I found in research is approximately 1 to 1.2 billion practicing Christians in the world. Over 2 billion claim Christianity, but the practicing Christians, approximately 1 to 1.2 billion, a lot higher than I actually thought it would be. And then to determine what practicing Christian really is, there's no idea really what number we could say is actually following every part of the Bible and Jesus' teaching. Probably a much lower number. And so the language of love, is it dying out or is it something that we can help? So if you would like to, you can turn to Luke 10. Luke 10, 26 through 37. And this is the story of the Good Samaritan, the parable of the Good Samaritan that Jesus told. And this story is one of the most popular stories in the Bible. In fact, you'll find non-Christians, people who do not know the Bible at all, and they know the term Good Samaritan. And that's pretty cool, actually. This story has been extremely popular, and they know what that means. We're going to read here, I'm going to read the story, actually start in verse 25, and we'll read through it. And behold, a lawyer stood up and put him to the test, talking about Jesus. Teacher, what should I do to inherit eternal life? And he said, what is written in the law, and how do you read it? And he answered, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your strength and all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself. And Jesus said to him, you have answered correctly. Do this and you will live. But he, desiring to justify himself, said to Jesus, who is my neighbor? Jesus replied, a man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he fell among robbers, who stripped him and beat him and departed, leaving him half dead. Now by chance, a priest was going down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. So likewise, a Levite, when he came to the place to where he was, and when he saw him, likewise, a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he journeyed, came to where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion. And he went to him and bound up his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. And he set him on his animal and brought him to an inn to take care of him. And the next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper and said, take care of him, and whatever more you spend, I will repay you when I come back. Which of these three do you think proved to be a neighbor to the man who fell among the robbers? And the lawyer said, the one who showed him mercy. And Jesus said to him, you go and do likewise. It's an amazing story. There's so much here that could be unpacked, and I know it's a familiar story. I want to focus in on a few things, and then we're going to keep the story in remembrance and move on from there to three applications that I want to bring out in our daily lives. So, this man fell among robbers. This was not uncommon for this road. This was a dangerous road. It was somewhat steep, and there was rocks, cliffs. Robbers were usually there. So this guy, traveling alone in the story, the parable that Jesus is telling here, so he was exposed to that. And the priest comes along, and the priest is probably, sounds like he's alone as well, so he might have been afraid, but he decides that he's not going to help this man, passes on the other side. Same with the Levite. And then the Samaritan comes along, and a couple of notes about the Samaritans. Of course, we know that them and the Jews would not interact with each other at all. In fact, who knows, but maybe some of the robbers were Samaritans themselves. We don't know. Could have been so. It would make sense, actually, that that could have happened. And also, it says that the Samaritan was journeying, meaning that he probably was not just passing from city to city. This wasn't just a short trip for him, but he was actually on a fairly long trip. He had some other business that he needed to be doing. And so that's significant. He went out of his way to stop his whole trip for this man, showing love to him and compassion. And then on top of that, paying for him and treating him. And I'm struck by the response then of the lawyer at the end of the story here. Jesus asks him a pointed question, very brilliant way of getting his point across. Which one was a neighbor? And the lawyer responds, he doesn't even use the Samaritan's name. He says, the one, meaning the Samaritan, but he doesn't even say his name. I think that's significant. Sometimes they didn't even want to use that name. That would have been a little bit out of the ordinary for Jesus, some of his status, to even use the name Samaritan. And he says, the one who showed him mercy. So mercy is also involved. He saw that he had mercy on him. Okay. So the language of love, if I had to title this, would be the language of love. And this could go so many different directions. It applies to so many different parts of our lives. I'm going to take three things that I thought of that I will apply this to our daily lives so that we can take it and put this into our lives. These are things that I feel like I need to grow in these areas. But it applies to all areas of life. Before we go to those three things, those applications, I want to look at another scripture, two more scriptures briefly. We have 1 Peter 4. 1 Peter 4 and verse 8, talking about love. Actually, I'll read verse 7 as well. The end of all things is at hand, therefore be self-controlled and sober-minded for the sake of your prayers. And above all, keep loving one another earnestly, since love covers a multitude of sins. Love covers a multitude of sins. And later on in the passage, in fact, many of your Bibles will probably have this as the title of this chapter, is the stewards of God's grace. Think about that phrase for a second. Stewards of God's grace. It's not something we think about very often. Stewards. Usually we think about it in other ways, but we're actually stewards of God's grace. And he mentions that down in this chapter, just the next verse, in verse 9, he says, show hospitality. He says, serve one another as good stewards of God's grace. But we won't get into that a whole lot. But I want to focus in on the love that covers a multitude of sins. So I looked up this word cover because I've actually had some confusion about this verse, just simply not knowing exactly what this means and how far we can take it. But the word cover, taken in Greek, as best as I can understand it in my research, actually has the idea of stealing. It's swiping, taking it away and making it disappear is basically what it says, to vanish or to steal. And that makes it bring out some new meaning for me, that it covers a multitude of sins. So what's an example of that from Scripture? And to do that, we're going to read in Genesis an amazing story. This is probably one of my favorite stories in the whole Bible. Genesis 33, and I just want to read it real quick to show an example of how love covers many sins. So this is about Jacob and Esau, and some history from them. We know that they did not get along well at all. Jacob had some some pretty conniving ways to get the better of Esau and his family in general. And it was kind of coming back to bite him a little bit at this point. And Jacob was very afraid. Earlier in chapter 32, it gives even more description of how he was preparing for this. But we won't get into a lot of that. But essentially, he was thinking that Esau might come and attack them, and he was making preparations for that. So we'll start in verse 33, Genesis 33, 1. And Jacob lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, Esau was coming, and 400 men with him. So he divided the children among Leah and Rachel and the two female servants. And he put the servants and their children in front, then Leah with her children and Rachel and Joseph last of all. And he himself went on before, bowing himself to the ground seven times until he came near to his brother. So the reason he split up his family was for protection. If something went bad, they could hopefully get away, was what he thought. Because he pretty much thought Esau was coming to kill them. And that's probably what he deserved. But Esau ran to him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him. And they wept. And Esau lifted up his eyes and saw the women and children and said, "Who are these with you?" And Jacob said, "The children God has graciously given me." Then the servants drew near and their children and bowed down. And Leah likewise and her children drew near and bowed down. And last, Joseph and Rachel drew near and they bowed down. Esau said, "What do you mean by all this company?" Which he's meaning many animals that he brought as gifts for him. And Jacob answered, "To find favor in your sight." But Esau said, "I have enough, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself." An amazing story of forgiveness on Esau's part and the love that he showed Jacob. Essentially, their past difficulties just kind of disappeared in this moment. And that's a powerful story for us to see the power of love and forgiveness. Okay, three things, practical things that I want us to take away from thinking about the language of love. So, if you can remember, I see. Basically, if somebody's saying I see and they stutter at the beginning. I see. Invite, invest, and comfort. Invite, invest, and comfort. So practical ways that we can show love and make a difference in the world around us. Number one, invitation. We have this opportunity so much more than we think that we do. And this is something that I miss many opportunities. And my wife is showing me many good things in this area because she's very good at it. We have the opportunity to invite people to Christ. We have the opportunity to invite them into our homes. We can invite them to church. We can invite them to God. You have coworkers probably that probably don't have many friends, and you might be a good friend to them, even if they've never said so. You have people on the street that you may meet. You have cashiers that you talk to sometimes. Be hospitable to people. It could make a huge difference in their life. Even if you invite them over for a meal and they say they're going to come, and then the time comes and the day before or the day of or an hour before, they cancel. That's happened to us a few times, and that's kind of difficult because we made all this food for one thing, but you wanted them to come. But it still could have made a huge impact on their life because they were invited. Invitation exposes you. It kind of makes you vulnerable. And that is something that's rare in the world. And that is a way for you to show love. Invitation and hospitality. So we've all probably seen this happen. Our wives are probably way better at this than us husbands. I've seen that. Where you've got short notice, all of a sudden somebody's coming over. Maybe an old friend or somebody wants to stop by, and what does the wife say? Oh, the house is a wreck, and I don't have any food prepared. And And they kind of say that under their breath, and you're like, well, it'll be okay, but we're not really used to that. I mean, it's a real legitimate concern for them. I just don't know what that's like because I'm not in charge of that side of things, right? But I try to be comforting and everything, and then suddenly 7 minutes goes by, and you turn around, and there's this spread on the table of, like, you've got four different kinds of cheese, you've got meat here, you've got sandwiches that just came out of the oven. And this happened so fast, and they're walking in the door, your old friend that's, and it's an inviting place. And the women especially are very good at this. We need to support them in their skills of inviting people and being hospitable. Let's support each other in that. Recently, Shanna, she's like, hey, I've got some friends that I wanted to invite over to our house. And I'm like, okay, so, like, where are they from or whatever? She's like, well, here in Athens. And I was like, oh, how'd that happen? And she's like, well, I've been talking to the cashiers at Save-A-Lot, and I became pretty good friends with one, and I want to have them over for a meal. And so we did, and I'd never met this lady's husband before, but they came over, and we had a great time. And that was an opportunity that would have been missed if we just move on and go through the motions of life and not open that invitation. And I'm glad we did. Sometimes conservatives, I would say we would call ourselves conservative, conservative Anabaptists have a difficult time showing love and being vulnerable like that to the public. It's quite easy to do it in our groups, but to do it to somebody who is, we're not sure what they'll think or something like that, it is difficult. So how can we do better in that? And pretty much the only way is to practice it, is to step out and actually practice it. And it's interesting that most people are probably more nervous than we are to come into your home if they've never been with a Mennonite group before. So keep that in mind and show them extra hospitality. So that's number one, invitation. Number two, invest. This can go hand in hand with number one, but invest in others. When we invest in them, it's important that we're not trying to change them necessarily, but that we instead plant seeds in their life. And sometimes we can do this without even knowing it, which is awesome, but it does take intentionality to actually plant those seeds. And I was impressed with the fact recently that God gives the increase to that. We don't need to be thinking about the increase. We just need to think about planting those seeds. And this was exemplified this year in a great way to me. I know some of y'all in my family have heard this story, but it will stick with me for a long time. And that was when we were planting our garden this year. We were planting our garden, and it was the first time at our new house. The soil wasn't that great, so we're working on that. But I wasn't sure how things were going to grow or go. And overall, it went pretty well. But we were planting the garden just a few months ago, and we're out there with the children and planting away, and Shanna's pretty much running after Chloe most of the time because she was all over the place. So I'm planting the garden. I'm trying to beat the dark, you know, so I'm planting away. And Clarita's out there having a blast in the freshly tilled up soil, just like I did when I was a kid. And I enjoy gardening now. I didn't then really a whole lot, but now it's like best thing ever to see if I can make it work. So I'm like really focused. I'm thinking about exactly how I'm planting these seeds, going through all that. So I wasn't really paying attention to what Clarita was doing. But somehow she swiped a bunch of my seeds and plants, and she ends up on the corner playing in the dirt, the corner that had the worst soil. And you know how these little plants come in the plastic containers? So I was pulling those out, throwing the containers off to the side. So I turn around to clean everything up, and the containers are gone, and Clarita's gone. She's over in the corner of the garden, and she had all the containers, the plastic containers there, and she was piling dirt and rocks on top of them, and she had this mound about like this by this. And so I was like, okay, Clarita, it's getting dark and we're done planting, so let's clean everything up and throw all the trash away. And So I go over there, and I start to pick up these plastic things that were half covered in dirt. And she starts to, like, lose it. She's crying, and she's like, no, no, Daddy, don't mess up my garden. And I was like, oh, your garden. She's like, yeah, I planted seeds in here, and I've got my plants. She's like, it's my garden. Don't mess with my garden. And so it was this moment where I was like, okay, but it's not going to grow. Like, she literally found every rock she could and started with that. She piled the rocks on, and then a little bit of, like, dry dirt that was not good dirt. And on top of that, there's plastic here. The roots can only do so much. And I was like, well, Clarita, it's really not going to grow. And I just didn't want her to be disappointed. And she's like, no, it's my garden. Like, we need to leave it, like, because it's going to grow. So I was like, okay, well, we're going to leave it. So to this day, those plastic things are still out there. And the garden's all finished up, and we need to clean it up now. But as time went on, some of this thing started to sprout, started to grow. I was getting excited. My beans did horrible. Like, I did not hardly have any bean plants come up. But lo and behold, I look over to the corner of the garden, and there's this huge squash plant. Like, it's huge. In fact, it's so big that it's taking over my peppers. And what do you know? The first squash that we picked from the garden was from Clarita's garden. And we got a lot of squash off that plant. And other things. Pretty soon her beans, she had like 3 bean plants, because that's the only amount of seeds she could grab. They sprouted and had these huge plants, like bigger than mine. And we picked beans off of them. Per plant, they did very well. And it struck me that I was just reminded that I don't have any control over the increase, and God is in control of that. And we just need to plant those seeds, just like she did, and do it in full faith. I mean, she had all the faith that this was going to go great, and it actually did. It really surprised me. So that taught me a lesson about that. Invest in those around you. Invest in your children. One of the greatest gifts that we can give the world is training our children to be servants of Christ. You have a huge influence on your children. And so invest in your children. Show love to them. We were at Kingdom Fellowship Weekend recently, and one of the messages there was on the family and that sort of thing. And the preacher, I forget his name now, but he said, you can tell a lot about a parent and child when there's love in their home between the two. It's like at almost any age, if the parent makes eye contact with their child and they say their name and their head pops up and they make eye contact, he said, watch the response. He's like, does the child smile, happy to see him, or do they kind of look down and move away? He said, it's a very serious thing that we have such a great influence on our children, and they should be able to look at us and smile, and we should be able to invest in them and know that they're loved. One of the most powerful things we can show people is love. Notice how I worded that. One of the most powerful things we can show people is love. We can show a lot of things. If it doesn't come down to doing it with love, it is completely empty, like 1 Corinthians 13 says. And I think we're going to go ahead and actually turn there and look at a few things in 1 Corinthians. A very familiar chapter, but very powerful. It's interesting that the first verse, I don't know that we're going to read here this chapter, but the first verse talks about speaking. If I speak in tongues of men and of angels and don't have love, then I am like a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. So it's talking about the way we're vocalizing things. Does it have love? Later on it says love never ends. Other things will pass away, but love will always endure. That's encouraging. And then a section that often gets missed is actually the first part of chapter 14, where he says, pursue love. And then he continues on, earnestly desire the spiritual gifts, because he's talked about spiritual gifts in chapter 12. But above all, he says, pursue love. And that's the first part of chapter 14. So this is something that we need to develop and pursue daily. So yes, one of the most powerful things we can show people is love. And it's important to realize that we show it. You can literally talk till you're blue in the face, if that's possible, about love. And it really does not do much of anything unless you display it and show it. So let's not just talk about it, but let's do it. I was struck, we were recently up in Minnesota last weekend, and one of the message and devotional went together really well up there, and they talked about the promises that we make. We make promises sometimes that we never really plan to keep, and that's not good. So one of the examples was when you're talking to somebody, maybe it's somebody you haven't seen in a long time, and be like, wow, you know, it's good to see you. You know, we need to catch up sometime. But do you catch up? Or we need to go out for coffee. Yeah, let's go out for coffee sometime. Yeah, maybe like in the next month sometime we can do that. And then do you actually go out for coffee with them? Depending on the culture that you're in, this is probably the more rarity, but it was brought up in our men's Sunday school class up there then. Somebody mentioned it. Depending on where you're at, like different countries, you can majorly offend somebody if you do that. And maybe here in the U.S., as in like, oh, yeah, let's go out for coffee sometime, and yeah, maybe toward the end of the week or whatever, and they're basically sitting there waiting for you to call, and you never go out for coffee. That is something that we kind of do. It's kind of they called it the Minnesota nice thing up there. It's the Tennessee nice thing. Like, it sounds great, and you really have good intentions. You would love to do that, and I know we're busy, but if we do say these things, let's go ahead and follow through with them. Because we were talking about, like, well, what's the best way to handle this then? Do we just, like, not say those things and try to be really careful about that? Because we're saying it out of good intentions. And my first thought was, no, don't just not say it. Just do it instead. And it will develop our relationships and our love for each other. But I realize that we can kind of overlook those things as a group together sometimes. But it's very much more serious if you do it to a non-Christian. So keep that in mind. If we say something that we're going to do, let's go ahead and follow through and do it. That is something that they may not see in their life very often. And that is a way of showing love to them. Invest in others. I was also blessed recently with, I feel like you guys do these things quite well. When Linford here hurt his foot recently, he said something in church a couple weeks afterward that just really blessed me. And it's a great thing it's a good example for all of you, because I don't know if you remember what he said, but he said, you know, my foot's starting to get better, you know, it's actually not broken or whatever. But he said, I was very blessed by, you know, within just a few days of this happening, he said, many or most of you men had asked him how he was doing, or called him, or reached out, or asked to help, or something like that, because of what happened to him. And that is really awesome. And I want to encourage us to continue doing that and to be aware of those needs. That's a way to show love to people. Okay, invest, and the third one is comfort. The way we can show love is comfort. So I don't have a whole lot to share about this one. Instead, I'm going to read a story about this. And it is a children's book that I really like. And so I'm going to read it to the children, but there's a lot here for the adults to learn. So it's got some cool pictures, so I'm going to ask all the children that want to participate to come right up here on this bench, and we're going to read a story, okay? Let's have a good showing up here. You want to see these pictures. Okay, yeah, you can sit down here with your friends, okay? Okay, have you seen this book before? Oh, you have it too. Maybe you guys know this book already. No, some of you don't. Have you seen this book? Man, everybody has this book. Well, we're going to read it again. Anybody else seen this book? A few of you. Okay, we got room here. Can we make some room? Spread out a little bit right here? Or over here? Okay. Well, how about we do this? Let's have you three boys go to the back bench, okay? And then, Kira, you can come over here and sit next to Sheena, Xander, right here. Oh, okay, we've got four boys. There we go. No, you're okay, Clarity. You can sit down. Okay. So when I first read this book to Clarita, and we had just gotten it, I thought it was great. It's a good example of how we can comfort somebody. All right, so here's the story. One day, Taylor decided to build something. Something new, something special. Something amazing. Taylor was so proud. But then, out of nowhere, things came crashing down. He looked so sad. The chicken was the first to notice. Cluck, cluck, what a shame. I'm so sorry, sorry, sorry this happened. Let's talk, talk, talk about it. Cluck, cluck. He's dancing all around. But Taylor didn't feel like talking, so the chicken left. Next, the bear came. Grrr! How horrible. I bet you feel so angry. Let's shout about it. Roar! Look at him yelling. But Taylor didn't feel like shouting, so the bear left. The elephant knew just what to do. Trump-a-da! I can fix this. We just need to remember exactly the way things were. But Taylor didn't feel like remembering, so the elephant left. One by one, they came. The hyena, hee-hee, let's laugh about it. The ostrich, gulp, let's hide and pretend like nothing happened. The kangaroo, tisk-tisk, what a mess, let's throw it all away. And the snake, shh, let's go knock down someone else's. But Taylor didn't feel like doing anything with anybody, so eventually they all left. Until Taylor was alone. In the quiet, Taylor didn't even notice the rabbit, but the rabbit moved closer and closer until Taylor could feel its warm body. Together they sat in silence until Taylor said, "Please stay with me." The rabbit listened. The rabbit listened as Taylor talked. The rabbit listened as Taylor shouted. The rabbit listened as Taylor remembered and laughed. The rabbit listened to Taylor's plans to hide, to throw everything away, and to ruin things for someone else. Through it all, the rabbit never left. And when the time was just right, the rabbit listened to Taylor's plans to build a kin. "I can't wait," said Taylor. "It's going to be amazing." The end. Okay, you can go back to your seats. I just really love that story. When somebody's going through something, sometimes just listening and being a comfort to them is what they need to heal. And it doesn't end there, but it's a critical part of loving others. And then out of that, comfort is born some new energy to move forward and to keep going. So that's all I had to share here this morning. I did want to leave you with something pretty awesome that I found out through my study. And that was the definition of the word goodbye. So I figured this out when I was studying about the languages there for the beginning. The English language is very interesting. The word goodbye is actually it's a phrase put together. And so it's actually God be with ye put together. I did not know that. So when we say goodbye, it's actually just kind of a crunched down version of the phrase God be with ye. And so I thought that was pretty cool. So let's remember that. And most of all, let's remember to show love to others. Invitation, investing, and bringing comfort. Let's pray.